Prime Time Replay from Money FM 89.3.
I am reading A Place for Us by Cassandra Chu. She advocates for equal opportunities for all. She is the first woman in Singapore to become a guide dog handler, is a professional psychotherapist who manages the Safe Harbor Counseling Center, and is a mother to a 13-year-old. She was just 8 when she received news of a permanent and irreversible vision loss from doctors as a result of Stargardt's disease. That's an inherited disorder of the retina, the tissue at the back of our eyes that sends light. But it was a child psychologist that made a powerful point that Cassandra could choose to build a life that was not defined by either the label blindness or Stargardt's, but that she could build a life based on her response to the world. Now 40, her new book that took a year to write is not only personal, it makes a powerful point that people should be seen as individuals before their disability. Her book is also the first book in Singapore to be brought out simultaneously in paperback, ebook braille, and digital braille, which is read on tablets that create raised bumps through a pneumatic system. It is a great pleasure to welcome to read author Cassandra Chu. Welcome, Cassandra.
Thank you for having me, Michelle.
Thank you for being here. Congratulations on your book. Now, you withdrew from advocacy back in 2015.
You resigned.
You were then in a part-time position at Guide Dogs Association for the Blind.
Yes.
This after you were prevented from entering Zara at Takashimaya because
right.
you had your guide dog with you.
Yes.
They didn't want the dog in the store.
No.
And you said that the vitriol that you read in social media posts that was aimed at you was incredibly hurtful, understandably. Do you think social media is at all altering inclusivity, the state of inclusivity in Singapore?
I would say yes. It's a double-edged sword. It goes both ways. When I first started this advocacy journey way back in 2011, when I came back with Esme, all I really wanted to do was, you know, I had small ideas and small dreams back then. And I thought to myself that, hey, you know, life isn't great. It can be better. Hopefully, with what I do with social media, showing people my day-to-day life, how I can lead a relatively independent life with the help of Esme, my guide dog, 1,500 years down the road, it will be a lot easier for Singaporeans who needed a guide dog to use one. So it has gone from like 5 likes, which is my family and friends, to well over 11,000 today. But, you know, it's like I said, it's a double-edged sword. So you get good stuff and you get bad stuff. And this is one of the main things you really have to be accepting and aware of becoming an advocate. No one really loves you. Half the time they hate you, but when they do love you, there are people that are also very, very supportive as well.
How do you think we can make Singapore a lot more inclusive today?
Personally, I would say inclusivity or inclusiveness would mean the need to include someone suggests that you're already excluding that person or sector or community in the first place. I know that can be hard to swallow, but inclusivity, as I wrote in the book, isn't just about tokenism, isn't about inviting someone with a disability or someone, a coloured person, to the table and paying for their meal and shoving food in your mouth, but also giving them the opportunity to have dignity and pride, to sit alongside you and do the things that you do, be able to pay for their meal, through having decent work that pays a fair amount. So they have that dignity.
Yeah. So when it comes to the state of where Singapore is in ensuring that there is a place for all, including the visually disabled, where are we right now?
I would say in terms of the hardware, the infrastructure, we are probably 9 or 10 out of 10, comparing to many other places in Asia that I've traveled, even some countries in the West. Our government has been really, really supportive and putting in tactile flooring, putting in audible traffic signals, not all places, but most. And that has allowed a disabled person, a blind person, to travel around on their own independently. But the hardware, that's what I hope that with A Place for Us, the book, I could hopefully nudge society a little bit in that direction to soften the HEART where people can think more can be more inclusive, can be to see the person for who we are, the mother, the father, the daughter, the son, the doctor, lawyer, Indian chief underneath the disability. Because disability is just merely one part of us, whether we are blind or we are deaf or we are autistic or whatever it might be. That's just a part of our identity. Just like Michelle, you are a woman. That's one part of your identity.
Cassandra, earlier this year you were in the news for your attempts to raise $30,000 for a new guide dog, Elke. Elke, by the way, is in the studio with us. She's the first guide dog to be in our studio. I'm thrilled. And she's gorgeous.
Thank you.
Tell me, were you able to meet your goal through GoFundMe?
Yes, I was. Very, very thankfully, I did. And I actually wrote an article, an opinion piece, a couple of weeks ago before I left for training with Elke, sharing about that funding journey of how I achieved that funds. And I realized that there was some negative coverage, understandably, and I expected that. Traditional media coverage didn't push the funding campaign by a huge amount, probably in the range of 10%. But what really, really made a difference was the family, the friends, the business associate, even some clients of mine who felt strongly that, hey, you know, Esme made a huge difference in Cassandra's life and we want to see her be able to continue that journey with another guide dog now that Esme is getting older.
Because I went to the page and it said you met 89%
correct,
of the goal.
Because some of it was done offline. So I did a run at the Marina Bay area where we had lots of friends come by and it was ticketed. So the Irish community was super supportive as well. The Irish Embassy here held two quiz nights at Magetigan's. And that raised some money. Obviously, both of these events were not directly donated to the GoFundMe campaign platform. And it was given to me in cash. So the 89% plus all of those actually came up to 102-103%.
We are speaking with Cassandra Chu. She is the author of A Place for Us. She is a psychotherapist. She manages the Safe Harbor Counseling Center. Is that your own business, Cassandra?
Yes.
Okay. So you are a business owner. We'll get into the nuts and bolts of that. We need to hear on Money FM in just a bit.
Yeah.
But first, I wonder if you'll take listeners on the journey with you in terms of how you see the world. Take us back to when you were a child and you realized that you were seeing the world differently.
I didn't quite realize that I was seeing the world any differently. I was just trying to be like everyone else, play catch, hide and seek, that kind of stuff. But you can imagine what it is like to play hide and seek without being able to see where people are running and hiding. And that was when kind of all the trouble started, trying to be normal, trying to assimilate into society, into school, having social networks.
But this is progressive. So at the age of two, three,
I was perfectly fine. And nobody knew anything was amiss till I was in primary one when my primary one teacher said to my mom, there's something wrong with this kid.
Because of your handwriting.
Because of my handwriting, because I wasn't following on in classes, what was taught in class, because I couldn't see what was written on the blackboard in those days. I understand nowadays it's a whiteboard.
Eventually, though, you do blossom academically.
Yes. Took a long, long time. But I would say that I blossomed because I embraced my difference, my disability. And I went to the then Singapore School for the Visually Handicapped, which is Lighthouse School today, where the classes were a lot smaller. There was only six students to one teacher. And of course, there was a lot more help from the teacher in terms of describing what's going on the blackboard. You know how teachers, when they usually teach, they go, this plus this equals to that. And to a blind person, when someone's pointing, this plus this, what is this? Right. And what is that? You don't know. But when the teacher says 2 + 3 = 5, you get it. So the teaching methods were a bit different. Plus, I was given adaptive equipment, such as a CCTV back then. It's different from the security CCTV cameras. What it does, it's basically a camera that enlarges what's on a printed piece of paper onto a computer monitor, and it blows up each alphabet to about a foot tall. Obviously, it was a lot easier to read. I was able to see some, but it was very tedious to read as well. And eventually, over time, I moved on to realize that I cannot depend on my very unreliable eyesight that was changing by the month or the year. And I started using speech on the computer. And with the advent of technology, thank God for that, life is so much different now. I went through university with the help of text-to-speech technology on my computer.
Wow.
So I scanned my material, my textbooks and class notes at night, and I read it in a day before going for classes. So that's kind of how that journey was. And that's also when I realized that, hey, you know, when I have access to a good system that can allow me to be integrated, that I am able to function, able to read or do whatever it is to do, that gives me the ability to be on an equal footing. And I have that place for me in this big world.
Hard enough to get people to read when they can see with no problems.
Mm-hmm.
But here you are reading when you can see only three letters at a time on the CCTV thing.
Yep.
Incredible. And at the age of 15, you begin representing Singapore in sports.
Yeah,
How did that contribute to you developing as a person?
Big time. I would say that one of the biggest memories that I have was probably when I was about 16, 17. I was in KL representing Singapore in swimming, and I came back with... I was awarded with my 7th gold medal. It wasn't KL, my fault. That was in Beijing in the FESPIC Games, which is something like what is the Para Sea Games today.
Right.
And then after, you know, they put the medal on my neck, this little kid came running up with a bouquet of flowers. And I was like, oh, okay, I got flowers. But the next step was when they started playing Majula Singapura, and I just started tearing up. And I thought to myself that, hey, you know, what did I do to make them play a song which I didn't quite like hearing every day in school? But I suddenly felt so proud of being a Singaporean, and I thought that, you know, whatever I did, I wanted to do more of it to show that I can be just as able and capable despite the one disability I have, and be able to do my parents and my country proud.
Let's talk about personal acceptance. Yeah, I thought it was really powerful in your book. You share the words of that child psychologist who made such a powerful point to you when you were 8 and you received the diagnosis that your vision loss is irreversible. And that psychologist says, you know, you can choose to not be defined by the label blindness or Stargardt's.
Mm-hmm.
What did he say?
He basically said to me what I wrote in the book, which is, blindness is one part of you, like what I mentioned earlier, and you can show the world what you can do by doing the things that you want to do, and you'll be defined by those things. So, you know, when I first graduated with a master's in counseling, I asked myself, and this is delving a little bit into the Money FM thing, how do I want to market and brand myself? A blind therapist or a therapist who is blind? What does my blindness have to do with my profession? And the truth is nothing. So I decided to go ahead to brand myself. I mean, it's kind of two separate identities, which is kind of strange. First and foremost, I am a psychotherapist. That's what my background is, where my training is, how I make my bread and butter. But the second job, which is a more calling than a paid one, or one that I interviewed for, it came knocking on my door, is the advocate part.
Okay. And you write, there is a chapter in your book titled Changing the Meaning of Blindness. And I want to ask if that is a chapter about changing people's responses to the term.
Yes, and also changing my own response to the term, my own journey about changing the response to what it means to be blind in the community. And that has always been one of my mottos in the advocacy work that I do. I want to change what it means, not just to be blind, but to be disabled for myself, my community, and society.
And you write that the state of people with disabilities across Southeast Asia is actually one of the reasons why you wanted to write this book, A Place for Us.
Yes.
So tell us about, you know, what has stayed with you, because you've traveled quite a bit in Southeast Asia.
Yeah.
And when you look at the place of people with disability within this context, Southeast Asia, what do you take away from that?
Just three alphabets, SAD. And it can be quite depressing, because throughout the 650 million Southeast Asians, 17 million of us are disabled. And if we really look at it, how many of us have the opportunities or the good fortune, like myself, to have an education and a job, a paying job, and has some meaning to life? Most of them are stuck within social service programs that, it gives them something to do, but it pays very, very little, perhaps something like $100 or $200 a month, not quite enough if you look at all the other daily living expenses on top of the medical expenses, if they have any, from their disability, or even adaptive equipment costs, like the watch I'm wearing is a Braille watch, and it's just a very simple watch, but it costs $300. You could probably get it from the Pasar Malam for like $10.
Right. Now, in terms of independence, what have been turning points for you?
Ooh, I would say Esme is a huge one.
Your first guide dog.
Yes. Yeah. Previously, I was using first my mother's arm. Mm. Then I started using an umbrella. Then I started learning how to use a white cane. And then with technology, of course, there were talking GPS apps, which was the most amazing thing way back in the early 2000s, I thought, because I never knew there were so many things around me until the GPS told me. And then when I started working with Esme, my retired guide dog, I started realizing that I can go so much faster. I don't have to be really limited about just by the reach of my white cane, which served to tell me when there are obstacles. But Esme could see much further, 6 to 12 feet in front of her, and she would avoid obstacles, find doorways for me. I could walk so much faster.
From Esme to Elkie, a new guide dog who thinks I'm a popsicle and keeps licking me. I think she thinks I would need a bath. What has been the biggest gift that animals, dogs in particular, have brought to your life, Cassandra?
I think they've taught me to be happy, taught me to be thankful for what I have. One of the biggest lessons I learned from Esme is that an empty mineral water bottle that costs nothing can give her so much joy, because if you watch her play with it, just tossing it in the air, chasing it, it's something that we're going to toss in the trash. But to her, when you give it to her, it's the most amazing thing. And I think I always think back about playing with Esme and Elkie as well, with just empty mineral water bottles. And it makes me think that I don't need a lot of things in life, just simple things, people that I love around me, my family.
They do teach us a lot about love, mm-hmm. don't they? So you're a mother to a 13-year-old. What has motherhood brought to your sense of self?
Ooh.
It's a big question for 60 seconds on the clock.
Yes. I would say that motherhood taught me to really be independent, because I can no longer be dependent on someone else. Now I'm responsible for a little monster or princess, depending on what year we're talking about.
She's 13 now.
Yes. So now it's more little monster. Yeah. But I used to be a little princess. Nah, she's still a princess deep down inside.
Oh, she's lucky she has a psychotherapist as a mom.
Mm-hmm.
It's just wonderful.
Teenage angst.
Oh, I can imagine.
Yes.
Well, it's been great meeting you. All the best for your future.
Thank you. It's a terrific book.
Again, the title of the book is A Place For Us. I've been speaking with Cassandra Chu. And if you'd like to read more about her, you have a website as well, right?
Yes, that's right. It's CassandraChu.com.
Cassandra, thank you for being here.
Thank you.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at MoneyFM893.sg or download the SPH radio app, available on Google Play or the App Store.